Wisconsin is the dairy state. After all, Wisconsin is the top producer and manufacturer of cheese in the nation. When you drive through this part of the state, you'll see hills marked with cattle or fields of waving corn through your windows. Agriculture is woven into the very fabric of Wisconsin life. But on closer examination on that drive across western Wisconsin, you'll see abandoned barns and outbuildings, and that's backed up by data showing that our traditional mom-and-pop farms are dwindling. A response can feel like an identity crisis. Today on the West Side, we discuss the issues facing farmers in western Wisconsin. Good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Our guest today, to begin with, Nate Jackson. He's a reporter at the Eau Claire-based ag newspaper, The Country Today. Nate, welcome to the West Side.
Thanks for having me.
And Jerry Clark is the Chippewa County UW Extension crops and soils educator, ag educator. Jerry Clark, glad to have you along.
Thanks. Good morning, Dean.
Well, later on in the show, we'll be joined by Jim Holt, who's the president of Wisconsin Farm Bureau, and Kara O'Connor, who is the governmental affairs director of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. We'll also hear from attendees of the Dunn County Dairy Breakfast held earlier this month. But are you a farmer? What would you see as the biggest issues facing agriculture, and how are you dealing with them? Or maybe you aren't a farmer, but you're curious about the challenges the people who put food on your table face. Call us with your questions, comments, and opinions at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Let's begin. Winter of 2019 was long and very harsh. Early cold and little snow cover killed alfalfa and other perennials. Heavy February and March snow buckled barn roofs, and then came the snow melt and spring showers that left many farms just saturated with water. Nate Jackson, what parts of western Wisconsin were most affected by that alfalfa kill?
Let's see. I guess I've seen fields in rough shape just about everywhere I've gone. Over toward Wausau, things didn't look great until 2 weeks ago. And even between here and Menominee, there are still fields half underwater. It's been difficult for anybody to get in.
Yeah. I've driven by the elk. One barometer I often look for is if you drive on past the Elk Lake Farm, if you know what I'm mm-hmm. talking about, on County Road E, I believe it is, in eastern Dunn County. It's often wet, and it's been wetter than usual this year. Jerry Clark, for those farmers who lost their alfalfa, what effect does that have on their operation, and how does that happen? It's under the ground, you know, mm-hmm. should be protected.
Sure. Alfalfa is a perennial and overwinters with a large taproot. But what I think, you know, some speculation on what happened this year was soil temperatures got very low. And so without that snow cover early January's, you know, we had rain after Christmas, basically. And then that you had that ice cover, ice sheeting out there, and then have this cold temperature that usually alfalfa can tolerate 20. Again, soil temperature and air temperature are completely different. We get a little snow cover. Soil temperature very seldom drops below 24 degrees. Alfalfa can handle that pretty easily. What happened is without the snow cover early, we saw soil temperatures, and this was from the Spooner Research Station, get down to 13.
Wow.
It held at 17 for a couple of weeks, and then we got snow cover and saw it come back up. Well, we speculate that 2 week period right in there was when most of the damage was done. And so now that you farmers realize fields were not going to green up, the alfalfa was dead, and it didn't really matter if it was new seeding or older stands and, you know, 2-3 years old, being that perennial crop that it is, we ended up seeing, this is tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars that some farms had to pay out in order to reseed this seed, get new seed, fertilizer, get it back, tillage, get it back in the ground, and hope that it, you know, survives for next year.
Yeah, we tend to think of this past winter in terms of the enormous amount of snow we got, record amounts of snow, but that didn't happen really until late January and February, and before then it was pretty cold. Mm-hmm. So if they're planting now, obviously that puts them a little behind. I mean, what happens as far as that operation is concerned? Do they have a hope of getting the hay harvest that they would have otherwise had, or are they going to have to do some buying? What's out there that are the possibilities?
Sure, there's several options. Some farmers tried to thicken these. You know, if the stand wasn't completely killed, they tried to thicken it maybe with some grasses, or they went with maybe small grains and a legume like peas and barley, peas and oats, just to try to get some forage. The key is feed inventory. Try to, you know, so they got the new crop planted of alfalfa. They can get a couple cuttings off of that this year, but that first cuttings maybe will be available late this month, maybe early July, and then another one in August. So they'll try to build that forage inventory, not just from the feed standpoint, but protein. So alfalfa is high in protein, and that's what really drives the milk production. So you may see them having to purchase more soybeans. A lot more corn got planted for corn silage as a forage feed for the dairy cattle.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of ration changes are going to happen just because the alfalfa is not in that or it's not available, or they have, like you said, Dean, purchase. And we have seen hay prices go up dramatically in the last couple of weeks, might level off now that some of the hay harvest has started for what's out there. But we did see alfalfa hay prices really start to climb.
Speaking of corn, planting for corn, according to the state, to the USDA, is about 2 weeks behind the yearly average. Nate Jackson, we're going to get knee-high by the 4th of July?
Yeah, I had my doubts, but you know, there were a couple of fields, depending on when everybody got in. If they had, you know, a window where they were able to get it planted before things got wet again, there are some spots where, you know, it's ankle high by the end of June now, so yeah, it's not bad. But there are others where they are maybe just getting in the field in the past week and a half. So
it used to be that farmers around here, maybe it still is, but most of the corn that they were raising would be to feed their own cattle. But Jerry Clark, I know there's the case in some cases where people are raising corn for a cash crop. What's the percentage about? Do you have a gut as to where most of the corn is that's grown in our area?
Yeah, I think as far as I'd say sandy soils got planted, like Nate said, somewhat a little later, but somewhat on time if they got those windows available there. But from a percentage standpoint, I think just using Chippewa County numbers, we plant just shy of 100,000 acres of corn. I think it's around 90,000-95,000 acres of corn in the county, and about 25,000 of that is corn silage. So you're still looking at 60,000-70,000 acres that go for grain, and that's the cash grain is more challenging, I think, right now than you would see for dairy as far as the producing of the corn. Because now you've got to dry that. What's the fall going to be?
Yeah.
Ideally, we're going to need a late frost and a nice long dry fall in order to not have a high drying cost for this corn that's probably going to be high in moisture come harvest time for the cash grain producer. There's a little more forgiveness there for a dairy producer because they can make high moisture corn or silage out of it for feed. But if the farmer is a cash farmer that looks to sell this for cash, as dry grain, that's where the challenge this fall is going to be is, you know, what's the crystal ball say for weather this fall? And if it's wet or an early frost, we're going to have a lot more challenges on the harvest end as well.
If there is, I mean, because of the flooded fields, if there is a shortage, are those farmers who have been able to get corn in and get a good harvest, will there be a better price then, probably?
Possibly.
Yeah.
We're starting to see corn tick up a little bit,
yeah,
because of, you know, this is a Midwest problem, the rain. The whole moisture thing is across the Corn Belt. I was just in Indiana last week and several fields unplanted down there.
Hey, Jackson, I know you get a chance to spend quite a bit of time with farmers in your role with Country Today. You know, what's the attitude out there? Obviously, you know, we talked about it before that you've got to learn to live with ambiguity if you're depending on the weather for your livelihood. But are you seeing any stressors out there among the folks you're talking to?
I don't know if I would say stressors. They seem they're optimistic. Everybody thinks that, you know, you just wait a little bit longer, you're going to be able to get done what you need to get done. But it's hard. I mean, they're farms that are going to wind up taking prevented plant, or, you know, if they're not able to get in, they'll have to deal with insurance companies. And It's difficult.
Well, let's talk about that. According to CropInsurance.org, crop insurance provided farmers $2.4 billion in liability. That's nationwide in 2018. Do most of the farmers you talk to have crop insurance, and is it viable for smaller farms?
Oh, I don't know if I can answer that. I'm not sure.
Jerry, any thoughts?
I think most take some partial coverage. They may not cover all of, I think you can go up to 85% of your yield and revenue and these kind of, there's all different types of insurance programs. But I think most probably take some kind of insurance just to avoid the catastrophic part of it. So it's maybe that cheaper insurance just in case there's this total disaster out there. And even alfalfa, some of the forages, because it's a perennial, the insurance isn't real high on it anyway. So many don't insure alfalfa, but they'll insure maybe their corn or their soybeans.
So besides what we've heard about alfalfa kill and a slow start to corn, are there other crops that have been affected by our weather in 2019?
I think it's mainly delayed planting is the big thing. Soybeans is one that's maybe somewhat forgiving as you get into mid-June. We're still seeing some fields being planted, but that prevent plant date I think just was May or June 10th, I think is in that ballpark. So we're past that now, but some farmers, again, still need, whether they're looking at it as feed or some alternative forages, these kind of things. But I think the biggie was alfalfa. Once we found out alfalfa was injured or killed as much as it was, that was the main the big challenge, I think, after the snow and the buildings collapsing and low prices. Yeah. It was just one more punch to the stomach that, especially from a dairy farmer, how much more can they take at that point?
Yeah, the collapsing, I thought about that, but I hadn't included that yet. But Nate, this winter we saw some of the – were they especially pole barns or were some of the larger dairy barns affected by snow damage as well?
Yeah, it was definitely dairy barns as well, and there was some loss of animal life. And it was bad in Trempealeau, Buffalo counties were hit pretty hard.
So if you're complaining about the rain today, hey, it's not snowing, right?
No, all right.
Hey, our guests are Chippewa County Extension Ag Educator Jerry Clark and Nate Jackson, a reporter for the Country Today Ag newspaper based in Eau Claire. Coming up, we'll talk about the state of the dairy industry and how it's affecting western Wisconsin. We'll also be joined by Kara O'Connor of Wisconsin Farmers Union and Jim Holt of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau. You can join the conversation by calling in at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11 on the Ideas Network, it's Larry Mueller. Today, Larry welcomes physical therapist Lori Tyne Brody in to talk about ways we can strengthen our pelvic floor and why that's needed. That's 11 today on Larry Mueller. Here on the West Side, we are talking about agriculture today. June is Dairy Month, and that means dozens of dairy breakfasts have been popping up all over western Wisconsin. Our producer, Clara Kniper, checked in on the Dunn County Dairy Breakfast earlier this month to get some good food, but also to check in on the people who produce that food.
The smell of waffles drifted from the barn, mixing with the scent of manure from the surrounding fields. A steady stream of visitors parked their cars at Alfalfa Lawn Farm and followed their noses to some syrupy breakfast. Last Saturday's Dunn County Dairy Breakfast saw more than 3,000 attendees. They mingled between the silos as they sipped chocolate milk and toured the farm's dairy barn. The breakfast was a celebration of Wisconsin dairy. Signs with facts about the success of the industry were planted around the farmyard. But amid this optimism, there were concerns about the challenges Wisconsin farmers face. Some farmers say it will be difficult for small dairy farms to survive what's known as the dairy crisis. Jerry Wolf is a recently retired farmer from Dunn County. He says his dairy farm wasn't able to absorb the rising costs of feed and fuel as easily as larger farms.
It's going to be these large family farms and or corporations that are going to be able to do it. And unfortunately, there's so many people that want to go back to the old mom and pop, and it's just not possible anymore.
Ed Achenbach works at Countryside Cooperative in Durand, selling feed, grain, fuel, and other products to farmers. Achenbach says he often talks with farmers who are struggling to make ends meet.
One guy said, how do I take a dollar's worth of income and pay $1.25 worth of bills?
Cameron Billen is a UW-Eau Claire student who interns with Wisconsin Farmers Union. Though she didn't grow up on a farm, working with the union helped her realize the importance of farmers. Billen says she's noticed people her age are becoming more conscious about where their food comes from.
We're always trying to focus on eating local foods, buying directly from the farmers, and just trying to cut out that middleman altogether that raises those prices for those farmers.
Chuck Wolf, who farmed with his brother Jerry in Dunn County, says he's worried young people are feeling pressured to leave the farm lifestyle behind.
The younger generation, they see their friends going off to town, and they're working 5 days a week. Some of them are only working 4 days a week. And it's pretty hard to keep the next generation on the farm, knowing that they're going to be tied down 24/7.
Kyle Casper dairy farmed his whole life. His farm survives today with the seventh generation of his family at the helm. Casper says dairy breakfasts are great opportunities for people to see farming from behind the scenes.
It's important that people understand agriculture and how important it is to us. After all, we all got to eat.
Just before noon, the engines of the red and green tractors on display rumbled back to life as car doors slammed. For some, it was back to the city. But for others, it was just another day on the farm.
Thanks, Clara Neipert. We're talking about the state of agriculture in western Wisconsin today on the West Side. We're joined by Chippewa County ag educator Jerry Clark and the Country Today's reporter Nate Jackson. They stay with us. We're also joined by Elk Mound farmer Jim Holt, who is president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau, and by Kara O'Connor, the governmental affairs director of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, which is headquartered in Chippewa Falls. And Kara O'Connor, let's start with you. Wisconsin lost 700 dairy farms last year alone, and we're supposed to be the dairy state. Why can't we solve this problem?
Dean, thanks so much for inviting me to be on the show. This is a crisis in the dairy industry. Not only did we lose 700 dairy farms last year, but if current losses in 2019 stay on pace, we will lose 850 this year. And that's a crisis of policy. We had an opportunity in the 2014 Farm Bill to implement smart policies that would have saved dairy farms, and we didn't do it. And so our hope is that we'll take this opportunity to do that now. And we're lucky to have information, data that were gathered by some of the top dairy economists in the country that show us how we can turn this ship around. And I'm happy to talk about those policies.
Now, I spent the 1980s reporting in rural Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, and even then we were talking about a dairy crisis with prices that weren't keeping up with inflation. And yet I paid $1.99 for a gallon of milk yesterday. Jim Holt, is today's crisis different than that one?
The costs for dairymen to produce that gallon of milk have certainly increased over time, and yet the return they get for it is marginally increased. So it's been quite a difficult period of time for dairy farmers and a longer period of low prices than we've seen in the past.
Now, there's been an increase in farms with 1,000 or more cows in the last few years, whereas the average farm in this area maybe 30 years ago might have had 40 or maybe 80 cows for a big operation. Jim Holt, what does that mean for our economy when larger farms are replacing these smaller family-operated farms?
Well, the large farms commonly are better and more open to different technologies, and those technologies allow them to be as efficient as possible. With the smaller dairies, where it's so intense for labor for the immediate family, it sometimes is difficult for them to adopt those different technologies that could make them more efficient.
There is a tendency. Go ahead, Kara, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I think I want to challenge Jim very much, although we're friends and colleagues, on the assertion that large farms are better. And the question that I would ask is by what measure? Because one of the things that we know empirically is that small farms contribute 55% more to a local economy than large farms do, because they make on the order of 70% of their purchases locally, while larger farms make far fewer, 20 to 30% of their purchases locally. And that is a difference with significant consequences for our rural economies. When we see rural towns hollowing out, it is not an accident that over the same time period, we've had fewer small farms that are making those local purchases. And so it is logical for us to draw the distinction between the impact that smaller and larger farms have on local economies.
But Carol Connor, with many of the big farms in our part of Wisconsin are owned by families, even though they tend to be branded as corporate farms. But they're families that decided they needed to grow beyond the 80-cow herd in order to get the economies of scale needed to survive as farmers. Is it problematic to make large farms the villains? Is this just the new way of family farming?
Wisconsin Farmers Union advocates for policies that would improve profitability for all size farms. So we know that with a smart supply management program that would help to balance the supply of milk with demand, we would have doubled net farm operating income for all size farms. Farms all across the board, that from the smallest to the largest, would have seen a doubling in net farm operating income. We would have also reduced farm losses by on the order of thousands of farms per over the time period from 2014 to now. The crux of that is we have to address the core problem and the core reason that farms are going out of business, which is that there is too much milk on the market, and we're oversupplying the market. When there's too much, prices go down, and the logical consequences that farmers exit the business. We can keep farmers in business and improve profitability for all size farms, both the largest and the smallest, so that people don't feel that pressure to expand, but rather can make a profit on any size farm they want to operate.
What specific policy would help with that oversupply problem?
There's a wonderful analysis at dairytogether.com. And so anyone could go on and watch this 13-minute video. It's discussed by a couple of the top dairy economists in the country, Mark Stevenson and Chuck Nicholson. And what they describe is a policy that was championed by a number of members of Congress and actually passed the Senate in the lead up to the 2014 Farm Bill. It would have given farmers an incentive to balance the supply of milk on the market with profitable demand. And so it gives farmers a market signal to gear back production when the supply is high and to increase production when the supply is low. We don't have any kind of market signal like that right now. And so what we have right now is a situation where there's too much milk on the market already, and yet farmers are still being told by their banks, by other consultants, to add more cows to increase their individual farm profitability. So we want to have smart policy that says, well, we need to make decisions that make sense and balance the supply with demand.
Jim Holt, where does Farm Bureau stand on that sort of legislation that would create some incentives for farmers to withhold milk from the market?
Well, we have a statewide dairy committee that's examining those options right now. One thing I might point out is that, yes, there is a surplus in milk in Wisconsin. There's a surplus of milk throughout the U.S., and globally we also have a surplus. So any solutions have to be a little broader than just Wisconsin or Eau Claire or Elk Mound. And that's where it becomes more difficult, because there are farmers that strongly support those concepts. There are also farmers that want to create flexibility for themselves in their future and are opposed to it. So it's a hotly discussed issue, and I'm sure it will continue to be so.
We're talking about agriculture in western Wisconsin here on the West Side today. We'd love to hear from you if you want to join in the conversation. 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. Kara O'Connor, despite efforts by organizations like yours, the Wisconsin Farmers Union, to get farmers to band together, there's never really been a successful effort that I can recall of getting farmers to get together to manage prices for their products. Is the independent nature of smaller dairy farmers to blame for some of the farm losses we're experiencing?
Well, Dean, I'll tell you, we're seeing a real sea change in the response that we're getting from farmers with regard to policies like supply management. Where we wouldn't have gotten very much interest, say, 5 years ago when prices were good, we're getting a lot of interest now. We're standing room only crowds when we have a meeting to talk about these policies. And one of the things that resonates with people is being less dependent on government subsidies and government subsidized insurance than dairy farmers are now. So we know that there would be farmers would have to rely less on the government subsidized dairy margin protection program, or now the dairy margin coverage under supply management, than they do now. And farmers are telling us over and over, we want to get a fair price from the marketplace rather than from taxpayers. So this is a policy that's not only good for farmers in getting that fair price from the market, but also good for taxpayers.
Some of the larger farms in western Wisconsin are actually CAFOs. That's C-A-F-O, an acronym for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operation. It's officially a farm that has at least 1,000 animal units, and it requires a special permit, in particular to make certain that that farm is not creating inordinate pollution. Joint Finance Committee of the Wisconsin Legislature last week rejected Governor Tony Evers' budget proposal to increase fees to CAFOs, but they did agree to add more inspectors than what are currently in place. Jim Holt, has Farm Bureau taken a stance on the permitting of CAFOs in Wisconsin?
Well, CAFOs have been an entity within Wisconsin for some time, and we do believe that those larger animal operations have a responsibility to use their resources well, and in particular, the ones related to water quality. So we're supportive of those additional inspectors, confirming that CAFOs do the job they're supposed to.
Should the Joint Finance have left in Governor Evers' proposal to increase fees to CAFOs to help fund some of that?
Well, there's always been proposals from each side of the aisle. In this case, the Joint Finance is dominated by one party, whereas Evers is of a different party. So they'll be battling back and forth on how those go forward.
Carol O'Connor, how about you? Where's your organization on this legislation in the state of Wisconsin regarding CAFOs? Governor has made one proposal. The Joint Finance has come back with another. How would you like to see this thing land?
One fact that's important to know in this discussion is that CAFO fees in Wisconsin lag significantly behind those in other states. In Minnesota, for example, CAFO fees are double to triple or quadruple what the fees are in Wisconsin. So being on order with other states in the neighborhood is reasonable to us, not least because these permitting decisions require a lot of resources from not only the state DNR, but also local governments. And so the other thing, in addition to the CAFO fees that we've advocated for, is allowing local governments control over those permitting decisions and allowing local governments to charge those permitted facilities the actual cost of what it takes for local governments to do their due diligence. Right now, by state law, local governments are prohibited, for example, from requiring CAFOs to provide financial assurance in the event that they damage roads, in the event that a manure pit is abandoned and overflowing, as we've seen during this recent dairy crisis. That leaves those local governments on the hook for those costs. And so Farmers Union advocates for local governments to be able to make sure that they are not out, that everyone's paying their own way.
Jerry Clark, one of your areas of expertise is in the realm of manure and nutrient management. What are the special challenges of dealing with all that animal waste generated by these larger farms?
Usually it can be a storage issue. I think that's where we saw some issues this spring with the excessive snowfall and rain and not getting these manure storage units emptied on time. So there were those issues. And like Kara said, there were some abandonment issues where farms got out of the business and the storage unit remained, you know, partially full or full to be emptied, and whose dollar that gets, who takes care of that. But typically you'll see, most of that, the biggest challenge is making sure that gets applied spring and fall. Most cases that storage is engineered or designed for 180 days of storage or 6 months, so you can store it up throughout the winter months, get it applied. There's planning that goes into this with a nutrient management plan. There can be even comprehensive nutrient management plans where they look at the total farm that goes with silage, leachate, all of this gets collected. and then making sure it gets distributed or applied across those fields in the spring according to what that soil test is, what the nutrients of the crop demand is, what that yield goal is. So getting it applied in the spring and then another storage period throughout the growing season and then emptied again in the fall for any of the crops that can be used again the next spring.
This past Friday, Wisconsin's 3rd District Member of Congress, Ron Kine, introduced a six-point plan to save Wisconsin's dairy industry. It has six tiers, and those tiers are 1, end the trade war; 2, a comprehensive immigration reform; 3, combat farm consolidation; 4, make going organic easier; 5, boost conservation and agriculture innovation; and 6, support beginning farmers. Jim Holt, I know that you haven't had a chance to review this yet, nor has Kara O'Connor. It's brand new information. But as you listen to that list, is there anything that jumps out at you as something that is a particularly good idea or a particularly bad idea?
Well, I think the congressman has thoughtfully put out some ideas for us to discuss and look for solutions. There is not a set of solutions easily going to accomplish the same, because as I said before, the challenge is not just statewide or nationwide, it's global. So we need to look for those things. I haven't had a chance to read through what the congressman proposed, but we'll be happy to take a close look at it.
Kara O'Connor, Ron Kind has introduced a number of plans to protect dairy in the past several years, but he's always been in the minority party of Congress, or for the past several years anyway. As Wisconsin Farmers Union's governmental affairs director, do you have any insight as to whether this type of initiative might actually gain some traction now that the House has a Democratic majority?
There are a couple points that he makes that I think are gaining traction with the new Democratic Congress. With regard to combating farm consolidation and even more broadly consolidation in the agricultural sector, we're hearing presidential campaigns pick up this issue. We're hearing the concern about consolidation in the economy pop up in sectors beyond agriculture, in technology, the fact that Google and Amazon are controlling large swaths of the economy. And one of the important features of the current challenges that farmers face is that they started long before the trade wars. So the trade wars were salt in the wound of a wound that already existed. And that, for crop farmers, has a lot to do with the fact that we now have near domination of the seed industry by just a couple of players, and fertilizer as well. And that has meant that the prices of those inputs have steadily increased while the prices that farmers received have flatlined. That's the effect of consolidation. And so I think Ron Kind is right on in pointing to the problem of consolidation and monopolies in agricultural markets as a key core problem that we have to address if we want to see long-term farm profitability.
Is this something in Congress where you can get some bipartisan support, maybe get some of the rural states behind that may not otherwise be in the same party as Mr. Kind?
I think so. I think we may be in an antitrust moment in Congress right now, and bringing together interesting bedfellows from both parties who are seeing the impacts in technology, in agriculture, and also in healthcare. When healthcare systems merge, costs go up by 50% on average. And that's a cost that farmers bear disproportionately because they're self-employed, and so they're buying health insurance on the open market. And when we don't have good health insurance and affordable health insurance for farmers, we suffer, and farmers suffer.
We're talking agriculture and agribusiness here in western Wisconsin on the west side. How do you see the future of farming in our area? Call us at 800-228-5615 to join the conversation. That's 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach on the west side. This is the Ideas Network. Tomorrow during this hour, On Point airs on this station, and Thursday at Spectrum West with Al Ross. Al will be talking with Gary Schwartzoff, who will be leading a UW-Eau Claire alumni choir to France to perform in the commemoration of the 75th anniversary of D-Day. That's Spectrum West, Thursday at 10 on this station. Here on the West Side, we're exploring the state of agriculture and farming here in western Wisconsin. Our guests are Jerry Clark, who serves as the ag educator for UW Extension in Chippewa County, Nate Jackson, ag reporter for the Country Today newspaper, Jim Holt, an Elk Mound farmer and president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau, and Carol O'Connor, governmental affairs director of Wisconsin Farmers Union. Again, you are welcome to join the program at 800-228-5615. Carol O'Connor, I'd like to come back to you, and we've talked a little bit about Representative Ron Kind's list of items that he wants to bring before Congress. One of those, the top item on that list, was ending the trade war. American farmers make a lot of money from exports, more than internal sales, actually. Last year, they exported $1.4 billion in dairy products to Mexico. Other big trade partners historically are Southeast Asia, China, and Canada. Kara O'Connor, how do President Trump's trade policies affect farmers here in western Wisconsin?
The trade wars have been a punch to farmers when they were already down. Like I mentioned before, farmers were hurting before these trade wars began. So let's go back and remember that the first tariff was imposed in this ongoing back and forth in January of 2018. But we did a survey of dairy farmers in 2016, and even at that time, farmers were losing $1 a hundredweight for milk. That means every time they were shipping a load of milk down the road, they were losing money. Those losses continued in 2017, and then the trade wars piled on to that challenge in 2018. But we had a problem long before the trade wars started. And that, again, in the case of dairy, is the result of a lack of any mechanism to balance supply and demand in the marketplace. In the case of corn and soybeans, tremendous consolidation. Remember, in the span of just 1 year, Dow and DuPont, Bayer, Monsanto, Syngenta, and ChemChina all had mergers that gave farmers even fewer choices in the marketplace when they went to buy their inputs. And whenever you're buying, your input costs are increasing, and the prices you receive are staying flat, you're going to have a challenge, and the trade wars only added to that.
Jim Holt, it appears we've dodged the bullet on increased tariffs on Mexico last week, but what is Farm Bureau's position on the Trump administration's trade policies, and how do you see them affecting our farmers?
There has been a major impact on prices, as Kara mentioned. Soybeans probably as much as anything, also dairy products. Trade is a very broad subject, and so there's many components to any trade deal. In this particular situation, the agriculture has kind of bore the brunt of lower prices resulting from these trade disruptions. And we're strongly encouraging both the USMCA and other trade deals to go forward and be ratified by Congress.
Nate Jackson, as you talk with farmers in your day-to-day reporting as an ag journalist for the Country Today, how concerned are they with federal trade policies? Does that come up a lot in conversation, or is it just one of those things happening in the background, one more thing I can't control?
A lot of times it's one more thing they can't control. They're, they'd like to see solutions, but they'd also like to be able to continue farming. And there's a lot of things that have to happen before they're going to feel comfortable again. So.
Carol Connor, it speaks a little bit to what we've talked about already, and that is farmers are busy people. Do they need to get more aware of the influence they can or should have on politics? Do they need to be speaking more? Do they need to be advocating more for themselves, even though that's just one more thing to add to a busy day? And Carol Connor, wondering what you think of that. I mean,
we think that that's one of the critical jobs of farmers.
Yeah.
So the running the farm operation, farmers are good at multitasking. You know, as a farmer, you're a biologist, you're a veterinarian, you're a mechanic, you're a soil scientist, and we like to add citizen advocate to that list. And one of the ways that we invite people into that conversation is by coming and learning at an event where farm organizations, Farmers Union, are talking about these important issues. So dairytogether.com is a great website to turn to. We also invite farmers to come to our summer conference on August 15th at Wisconsin Farmers Union Camp Kenwood in Chippewa Falls. We'll be talking that day in the morning about water quality and in the afternoon about antitrust, exactly how the lack of choice and the power of consolidated industries is driving down farmers' bottom line. And what we have found is that when farmers have information, they are excellent advocates because they know their situation better than anyone else. And citizenship and democracy is not a spectator sport.
Just one more time before I space it out, the August 15th event, how would people, if they want to be involved in that, take part?
You can call our state office at 715-723-5561 or go to wisconsinfarmersunion.com to get the information.
Great. Thank you. Jim Holt, it appears in the past 2 years, the Trump administration has issued a couple of aid packages to farmers. The latest earmarks about $16 billion to farms. Are you aware if folks are, is that easing the pain of the tariffs?
I think it's making some impact, although the vast majority of farmers would much prefer to trade rather than get aid. It has been a positive acceptance that farm income has borne the brunt of this trade problem. So it's helpful, and yet we'd much rather move past it into a trade situation.
Well, Wisconsin Farm Bureau, you know, does have the ear often of Republican members of Congress and legislators. What are they saying to those folks to try to influence that conversation?
I think that members of Congress, regardless of which party, are very interested in getting solutions to this trade situation. We recognize that there's been problems with trading with China for some time, particularly on intellectual property, and their continual desire to ignore the patents our companies hold. So all members of Congress, I think, realize it's a serious situation and want to move past it.
Looking at stepping back a little bit and kind of refocusing our on farmers in western Wisconsin, Jerry Clark, you've been in your position for about 20-some mm-hmm. years mm-hmm. in Chippewa County. As you encounter farmers who are struggling with these low prices and the financial pressures, what kind of adjustments or decisions are they making in order to stay in business or to not stay in business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think most are it's an issue that whether it's an expansion, a contraction, an exit strategy, that discussion, the communication is always kind of the big key. And especially if it's a family, sometimes if dad or mom are ready to get out of the farm, is the son or daughter ready to get in? So they have to line up if there is a transition. But I think when it's a stretch like this where, you know, dairy prices have been down for 5 years now, most look for maybe some type of, I think, number one, can there be, how can they increase their income through, like Jim said earlier, efficiencies, but we can only do so much. I mean, how, you know, can we get better feed? Can we get better genetics? Can we make the cows more comfortable? These are still take investments. And, you know, is it off-farm income? Does someone need to get us a job for, you know, off-farm job for a few months? Those kind of things. Is it an alternative crop? Is it an alternative business plan, like a custom operation, do more work for others, cutting hay, harvesting corn, whatever, you know, those kind of things to try to spread those costs out as far as possible. So we try to, as extension agents, when we do these one-on-one sit-downs at the farm office or at the kitchen table for that matter, it's a matter of trying to lay out as many options as possible and what they can do at this point, but many are at so many different, you know, we've got an aging dairy population of ownership. And when we're ready to transfer that to the next generation, if it stays on the farm within the family, whether that's a large farm or small, there's still family operated at that point. Are they ready? And that's, I think, the key that we, when we step in to help with that, both parties need to be ready, both generations or however that, whatever that strategy is, everybody's got to be ready and communicating. And a lot of times that's the key, is to get over that hurdle, and then ideas can start to come.
Nate Jackson, as you have encountered stories about farming in western Wisconsin and throughout Wisconsin, are there efforts that you've seen that have been successful to encourage young people to get into farming? Is that a trend that is possible to kickstart? Because we do have a very aging farm population. 58, 60 is kind of on the young side for a farmer nowadays.
There are young farmers getting into it, and they're, from what I've seen, typically a little on the smaller side. You know, they're doing other things as well. If they're either, you know, working off the farm and then running a smaller farm as a hobby, or otherwise they're doing more than farming. They're having events on the farm, something to kind of draw people to, come see what things are like on the farm and help, bring some money in too, whether they're tours or they're, evenings on the farm where they have dinners, concerts, yeah, stuff like that.
We focused on dairy this hour, and that wasn't necessarily the intent, but there are so many things going on. But, one of the things I'm thinking about is, what happens when that farm no longer is a dairy farm? I'm dealing with that, my home farm right now. After my brother retired, my mom, who still owns the place, rented it to a neighbor so he could do dairy farming. He couldn't make a go of it dairy farming. He continues to rent it and do beef farming. Jim Holt, I believe you made the transition from dairy to other farming. What pulled that trigger in your situation?
Well, in my situation, it was looking at the future and recognizing that conventional milking, getting under cows every day, probably was not going to work physically for a long time. So we took a look at the dairy and the commitment we'd need and the number of family members interested in that, and decided that we would transition more to the beef side. And that probably was a good decision for us.
Carol O'Connor, farmers can face isolation both mentally and physically. According to the Wisconsin Farm Center, farmers and ranchers are 2 times more likely to commit suicide than any other group, including veterans. Does your organization, Wisconsin Farmers Union, provide some help? And have your members shown that toll of mental health that isolation can take on farmers?
Yes, we're definitely hearing. I'm hearing people say things like, I was around during the farm crisis in the 1980s, and this is worse than that. And that's really saying something, if given the magnitude of the farm crisis in the 1980s. So we're doing several things at Wisconsin Farmers Union. First, we're advocating for support from our state and federal Congress to put money toward farmer mental health. The second is that we're working with Farm Aid to get money directly into farmers' pockets who have faced natural disasters. And again, you can call our state office for more information about that. That's 715-723-5561 for natural disaster aid-related payments. And then third, Wisconsin Farmers Union advocates for comprehensive health care reform, because health care stress is one of the top challenges for farmers. Based on a survey in 2017, half of farmers said that they would probably have to go into debt, sell farm assets, or sell the farm just to pay for medical care. And that kind of stress hangs over people's heads. And it's also one of the biggest impediments for young farmers, like you were talking about earlier, to get into farming. I hear all the time young people say, I would be farming in a heartbeat if I could figure out how to get health care for myself and for my kids, because a lot of those young farmers have kids. And the lack of affordable health insurance is a big impediment. Luckily, we have an opportunity as Wisconsin to dramatically improve that situation for farmers by taking federal funds for expanding badger care in the state. That would add $324 million to the state budget and help bridge the gap for farmers who need access to affordable quality health insurance. We're one of only 14 states that has not taken that money for health care, and we have an opportunity in the state budget to do it. The governor, in his proposed budget, accepted those funds Those are funds that Wisconsin taxpayers paid into and that we're sending to other states until we say yes, let's invest in health care.
Thank you, Carol O'Connor. We thank our guest, Nate Jackson of the Country Today, Chippewa County Ag Educator Jerry Clark, Carol O'Connor from the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Jim Holt of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and you're tuned to the West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.